We're here.
Is it recording now?
Yeah, we're recording.
Alright, okay, let me do an intro. Ready?
Do an intro.
Hello, welcome to the Spooky Park Bench Podcast. My name is Mike Sim. I'm a commercial photographer in my home country of Scotland right now. And over the Atlantic Ocean is my bespeckled friend, Christopher.
Say hi. I'm also a photographer in the United States, currently residing in Los Angeles. And you'll have to excuse Mike's audio. He's talking through AirPods because he is in Scotland. He's doing some stuff up in his home country.
I'm just restocking the haggis, getting my kilt tailored.
Visiting Dougal.
Visiting Dougal McDonald. Dougal McDonald. Dougal McDonald. Yeah. When Dark visits Dougal.
What was your week like? Have you been working? Doing any photography?
Guess what? Bloody have been doing some photography work.
Oh my god.
Not taking pictures though.
you were assisting, right?
I was assisting, yeah. Which, you know, you'd think that a man of my caliber, a man of my status in the photography game, you don't get 400 followers on Instagram by chance, Christopher.
by just assisting gigs alone.
You've really got to put the work in, you know. I was assisting a gentleman under the name of. You don't say that, do you? That's not a phrase.
It is.
Is it?
We can say it. We can do the name of.
Yeah, if he was like a parent company of himself, but he's not. He's just got a name. He's just a.
We're not sure. He could be a parent company of himself. We haven't verified that.
Yeah, I don't understand businesses and how those things work anyway. Neither I mean, I'm probably committing all types of fraud on a daily basis. Anyway,
hopefully.
I was assisting another Scottish photographer called Stuart Bryden in London, photographing for a clothing company.
Oh, cool. So not food, so clothes this time.
Yeah. So it was cool. It was great. He hired lots of cool equipment, way more equipment than we needed, which is always a bonus.
As usual. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 3 Pro Photo strobes, 3 octoboxes, 2 California like sun bounces. Guess what we used?
One.
Bingo. We used one. Didn't even change the octobox.
Used
the smallest octa for the whole thing. That's not true. And we used a speed light, a Pro Photo speed light, which I don't know if you've used before.
Is it the round head ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've used one. Super sick.
Yeah, they're
super
cool.
Yeah, really cool. It's one of these things where, like, when you get asked to assist somebody, you can often be like, oh, it's, you know, I don't really, you know, I'm past that. Like, I've done photography. I've done it for long enough. I don't need to assist anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's utter bullshit. You learn something every single time.
Yeah. I mean, I still assist to this day. I assist all the time. I think, photographers get to a point where they think, and I've gotten to that point before where I think like, oh, I've been doing this for so long, you know, I don't have to assist anymore. But the reality is, you're right, you do learn something every time. But also, there are photographers out there on some jobs, they just want a very capable, seasoned photographer to help them because that's just going to help, you know, it's just going to help the shoot that much
that's
more.
It. You end up picking up on little things like, you know, like subtle lighting changes. You can give them direction from behind the camera to see what you're going on. Because obviously we were shooting tethered. So like I can pick up bits that are blown out or whatever else, and I can either adjust the light or tell him to dial down whatever he's using at the time. Like it's just little things that doesn't involve him having to go backwards and forwards.
Exactly.
Also, you make suggestions based on your knowledge as a photographer.
Yeah, all the assisting or Digitech gigs that I do nowadays, I'm always being asked for my input, both creatively and technically, which it becomes less of like an assisting role and more of like kind of a collaboration, which is cool. Yeah. So I think, you know, when you're younger as a photographer and you haven't got a lot of time under your belt and you're still starting out, an assisting role could be cool for learning a lot. But then sometimes you got to realize too, when you get to a higher tier, you've been shooting a lot, you'll get assisting gigs still, but they will be more collaborative and more creative than just running coffee or moving lights
around. Yeah, but I also find that it was a nice little, it sort of boosts your enthusiasm for photography again, especially if you're in a little bit of a dip or a creative dip. It's quite nice to go and do these things. And then, because like this was like nothing I usually do, you know, and I've done something like this once or twice, but you know, this was like three models, a makeup team. You know, there was all the creative editors. There was loads. There was a lot of people on set.
Mm-hmm. Most of your models usually are edible.
Yeah, most of my models are edible. Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the time that I was photographing? This is a side tangent, but I was photographing some Vietnamese food, and they were doing it was banh mi.
Mm-hmm.
You know what banh mi is?
Yes.
Yeah. So Vietnamese like baguettes, like sandwiches.
Yeah.
And she cooked. It was this pork banh mi, so it was little pork balls, and she cooked them all. And she went off to go do something else. And after I'd photographed them, I ate them. And she was like, did you eat those? And I was like, yeah. She's like, I just seared them for the photograph. And like, no.
They're else. Raw in the middle.
Raw. Just were you okay? Raw. I was remarkably all right. Yeah. But I had a moment of just being like, the one meat you're not supposed to eat, like undercooked. And I just,
she must have just had some good pork that wasn't some
good pork.
Yeah. Or something that didn't need to be cooked all the way through. Wow. What a crapshoot. Luckily.
But yeah, so like, no, but it was nice to be part of this thing on Wednesday, I think it was, did it? Mm-hmm. So it was cool. It was out of, it just sort of, yeah, got me interested in, not particularly doing that, not because like, I find that, you know, there's a lot of waiting around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not my thing.
Yeah, that's, I don't mind that so much. I mean, do you mean specifically for like clothing? That kind of shoot is a lot of way around. Yeah, there is. It depends on what you're doing. Was it all on figure or is there like lay flats and stuff?
There was a couple of little flat lays, but barely. But it was mainly, there was 25 outfits in a very short space of time from like 10 till 6 we had.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
The first like three took a while. And then it was like the last 10 were just like bang, 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 just out. And it was all one lighting, you know, so it was,
yeah,
it was pretty simple. But yeah,
I actually did a shoot like that on Monday, actually.
Oh yeah? Oh yeah. Yeah, so it was at the studio.
Yeah, I was in San Francisco. So we did the same kind of thing where it was like two lights, but it was essentially one light because both lights were mounted to this movable white wall. And so they both were just like, it was just basically just filling is that whole wall was the key light, you know? And it was just like bang, bang, bang. So we did, let's see, we started at 8 and we were done at like 6:30. We did like 150 looks, I think.
Jeez, something
like
that. Man.
Yeah. It was just like one after another. It was really,
see,
really
that's nice where like you obviously differ from me because like, I just couldn't, I struggled to maintain focus or enthusiasm for that. Like
the luckily, one thing I noticed, with that crew, I've worked with them a lot and they're really great. And so they're good at, you know, cause the thing is they don't have the looks like pre-planned. They just have each individual piece and then they're on the fly figuring out the looks. So it's kind of more engaging than just like,
they don't got like mood boards and stuff for each look.
They have mood boards. Yeah. For like the model for like, you know, what they want, like poses to look like, how they want the outfits to look, but they wing it every single time. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's fast paced, but it's also, I don't know. There's a lot of collaboration. There's a lot of like discussion of like what the outfit should look like and everyone's kind of involved. And that crew's really fun to work with and they trust me. So I don't have to worry about the photography side. Like I know exactly what's going to look good and everything's very consistent. So yeah. But it was like, we looked at the sheet afterwards and we're like, wow, we did like 150, 160
That's
looks.
Insane.
I know. But I mean, it makes sense. We were quick.
One thing I've learned as I've gone on in my sort of career as a photographer is that like you need to show that constant enthusiasm to the client and always just be like, it doesn't matter what time or what they ask for. You just go, yeah, sure, of course, no problem. Let's do it. You know, we can make it work. Whereas before, like certainly earlier on, even if I thought it was like not particularly worth it.
Yeah.
Now I feel like I can voice my opinion in that sense, but not out of not out of sheer laziness and because I can't be arsed anymore, yeah. but because I think it might be better for the client. When I was like early on in the game, I'd just be like, or I was quite big-headed, I suppose, in the way about stuff. But it's learning how to work with clients. And the way that Stu worked with clients was brilliant. Like, he was very, very enthusiastic and was very much like, yep, cool, let's do it. Cool, whatever works for you. And it's just nice to watch. But the funny thing that Stu and I had was, so he's from Glasgow, I'm from Fife. And we both found out we were wearing almost the exact same outfit.
It was,
it was bad. We both had on, well, he was wearing Dickies. I was wearing not Dickies, but a similar, very similar cut. We were both wearing white Vans. Both of our t-shirts were tucked in. Both had our keys clipped to our belt. It was like someone had said, oh, and he's got tattoos and I've got tattoos. It was like, just pick. It was this is the Scottish photographer look. It was.
That's funny. Well, I mean, at least you guys are consistent, you know?
Yes, it was good. It was a good job. But no, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And I would 100% advise anybody, whether they're in the game, like new in the game or been in it for a while, to take up some assisting.
I honestly, I love those gigs because it gives me like a break. Because, you know, when you're a photographer on a gig, all the pressure's on you. So, you know, I love the opportunity to get to work with other photographers who I think are great. I love the opportunity to like collaborate creatively, but not have the pressure of having to like be the one to deal with all of it all the time. And then, like you said before, like you always kind of pick up a new thing. You learn something. Like I always like want to see what other photographers are doing, like lighting wise or how they approach like specific, poses or angles or whatever, like their methodology. Like it's always interesting to kind of like work with another photographer and get like creative inspiration. So I'll always do, you know, those gigs.
I think there's a nice thing as well about seeing that how little other people know, but that's not true. It's how much it's like winged on set as well. Like I think that you have a preconceived idea about photographers of a certain caliber go on there and they know to the millimeter where a light goes and where this goes and where that goes and what they're going to do. And a lot of it is literally just like, go and lift that a little bit higher, try it back a foot. Actually, do you know what? Actually, no, try the other side entirely. Like,
yep. All the time.
It's yeah. And I remember before I started using studio lights, like a few years ago, or I don't know, 5-6 years ago, something now, I was reading up on everything about studio lighting and it was so complicated. And then you realize that with digital, just shoot it, see how it looks, move a light.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, there's so many rules for like lighting and stuff on set, but like, honestly, like all of the good photographers that I know, and all the ways that I learned was just like experimentation, just trying stuff out. You can take a ruler or a measuring, you know, whatever, and just like really get everything.
What's a measuring whatever?
What this thing? What is it? It's I've got it right here. Measuring tape.
I thought you were going to bring out something like, I thought you were going to show me something like really cool and photographic. And I was like,
like a laser or something. No. It's just like, literally. I just couldn't think of tape.
I thought you were going to like, whip out something at your drawer. And I was going, whoa, cool. Tell me about that. And I was like,
I'm not cool. No, so that's it. Like you can bring out measuring tape and really make it everything precise and do the whole, what's that rule? The lighting rule? It's the,
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy.
I can't believe we're a photography podcast and I can't even think of what this rule is, but it's the thing.
I literally don't know what you're talking about.
It's lighting ratios, you know, like how far a light is, the fall off of that light, how powerful the light is. You know, you can do all that stuff, but you know, I've been on sets where people are exact and I've been on sets where people just wing it and you can't tell the difference in the end. If you get to a place where you want to be, like the lighting doesn't look, it looks fine. And that's the thing is like, when I was young, going into new things, like being on set, being the one in charge, being the photographer, I was so nervous. I wasn't going to do it right. And I wanted to look professional and be doing it the right way. But really the only thing you got to know is like, be collaborative, try things out. No one is a perfect, I don't know. No one's perfect at this. Everyone's just trying things. Just try it and have a vision and trust your gut and it'll be fine. And don't worry about putting 12 lights up like a weirdo. No one needs 12 lights.
No, I mean, to be honest, like, the other thing I've learned, and I said this to you the other day, was that if you light something with one light, I'm a one light guy. If you use a second light, you often need a third light to compensate for the use of the second light.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If that makes any sense.
Because then you've brought this other variable in that's then shown a different thing. That's like, oh, now I need light there. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I'm a one light or a three light guy, but I'm mainly a one light guy because.
Yeah. I rarely use just two lights. That's a good point. Yeah. It's either one light or like three. Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. So I did my thing this week. I did my job, but who cares about that? You saw a little bit about. I mean, it was the same thing you did. We did some photos for some clothes. It was fun. I was in San Francisco for a couple of days. Yeah, nothing crazy. You know, shooting the old Fuji.
Did you have a cocktail in San Francisco?
No, I had a lot of coffee, but no.
You don't really drink though, do you?
Not a whole lot. I'm not a huge drinker.
When you do drink, what do you drink?
I like gin and tonics. I like a good beer.
Gin and tonic. I didn't have you down as a gin and tonic guy.
What'd you have me down as?
I would have said a good beer, but like a cask beer or like a pale ale drinker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like a sour. I like a good sour too.
Do you? Like a proper sour? Not all the time. Or like one of those like microbrewery ones where it's like, like mango and banana.
I like the, what is it? There's the monastery. One, you know, the old style German, what do they call this? Like there's one called Duchess. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, there's that. Have you had Delirium?
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, too. It's good stuff. This is good. See, this is me now living my, I like to live my alcoholic life through other people these days. So like if somebody gets really, really drunk, I'm like, tell me everything about it.
I don't get drunk anymore. I get buzzed. Sometimes when I drink four.
That's such an American thing to say. Get my buzz on.
What do you call it?
Well, we don't really get our buzz on here. We're either sober or utterly wankered. That's just how it works.
Sober or pissed. That's it.
No one goes, I've got my buzz, and then they go home. It's like, I've got my buzz. That's like the equivalent of stretching before going to the gym.
Yeah, because you guys make it an Olympic sport. I mean, Americans do too. We just don't talk about it the same way.
No, you don't. I was in the Bahamas once, and there was guys from Florida there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they solidly drank all day with their little beer cooler things.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't seem to be remotely drunk by the end of the day.
Because they're pickled. They've been drunk for years.
But they were young.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That, you know, certain places you get started young and people are just like, when I was in college, everyone I was in school with was drunk constantly and I didn't drink that much. And so, whenever I got drunk, it was like a spectacle because like I was experiencing it like anew, but these people were drinking so often that they were just like, it didn't affect them as much.
what type of gin do you drink? What type of gin have you got there?
You know, we have, so one of my favorites is, you know, we have like Bombay Sapphire, we have you know, Seagram's, like all the normal shit. But I really like what's it called? Hendrix. I like Hendrix.
Oh, do you serve it with cucumber over there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's really refreshing. Yeah. It's super good.
Yeah, it bums me out though.
There's a you don't like that?
No. Get that out of there.
There's a bar in San Francisco called The Hideout. That my friend used to bartend at, and he made a drink called the CNC. It was, I can't remember exactly what was in it, but it was celery salt, gin, cucumber, and a cucumber tonic he made. And it was, I swear to God, the most refreshing drink I've ever had. And when he was like making the drink, like when he was like coming up with it, he would have me come and like taste them, and so I'd be sitting there at his bar drinking like five or six of them, all different iterations, getting fucking wasted. And then whenever I'd go back and have like, I'm gonna go back and have one, I'd bring a friend and be like, you gotta try this drink, you know, and I'd have one and be like, I gotta have another, and then three later and I'm just like, woo, I'm stumbling into an Uber to get home.
Refreshing nonsense. The village I'm from, there was a bar called Hogan's, and it was owned by this guy called Tony. And Tony was a raging alcoholic. Mm-hmm. He was often asleep at the bar.
Yeah.
And there'd be nobody in. And he would pretty much just gesture to like help yourself and put money in.
Serve your own ale, yeah.
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was one day when I was in there, And he had a certain whiskey that I'd never seen before. And I was like, oh, Tony, I've never tried that before. And he's like, you've never tried that, son? Hold on a minute. So he gets down the bottle and he pours me one, pours himself one. And then he was like, have you tried this? And I was like, no. And I started to think, wonder how long I can carry this on for. It was just Tony, I've never tried. What's this? Vodka? Is that how you pronounce it? Let's.
Oh my God.
Let's get a couple of those in. Yeah, that was. He's dead.
Oh, well, can't say I'm surprised. That's sad. He sounded fun.
That's Tony for you.
Dead. That's Tony for you. Dead. Really dark. Okay, well, moving. Actually, I wanted to bring one thing up that is kind of dark, but kind of funny. Not super dark, but you saw a little bit of it when I made that post on Twitter that people got really pissed about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
I'm still slightly confused as to what they actually are, but
NFTs?
Yeah.
No one really knows what they are, because if you were to define it, it would then become completely useless. No, it would just become useless, because it's one of those things that I feel like is so nebulous that like there's value associated to it, because we kind of like don't know what it is really. It's like it just like it has an assumed value, but then like as soon as you define it and everyone knows exactly what it is, it doesn't have value anymore because the mystery is gone. But basically what I said on Twitter was, I respect any photographer who doesn't try to get into NFTs. And what I meant by that was there's a lot of forces in the photography world, especially now, that are like pulling and pushing a lot of people, influencing them in different ways that can often, you know, be ill-advised or at least be kind of like trendy, right? And it was just broadly like a commentary on like, you know, that's a trendy thing right now. And if you're not falling into like the pole of being into that trend, I think that, you know, I like that. I like that you're kind of going the normal way and doing your own thing. That's cool. It was in no way me saying I don't respect people who do NFTs, because that's not what I said. But a bunch of people at first were like, yeah, same. And like people had like voiced their opinion that was, you know, similar to mine. And then I got a bunch of NFT enjoyers who just were like so angry, and they were like retweeting and quoting. And like one guy said, like, I respect any photographer who minds his own goddamn business or some shit like that. And I was like, Jesus. Yeah. And so I had always had like a really weird opinion of NFTs. I always thought it was very kind of gross and hyper commodification of photography and art in general. And, you know, we sell art. I'm not stupid. Like, photography and art is sold all the time, but I feel like NFTs, it's a very brazen Wall Street kind of like into photography, art, you know.
It's almost not about the art in itself at that point. It's about it being an NFT, you know? Like,
because the thing that doesn't, like, if I buy a print from you, I can put that print on my wall and enjoy it every day.
Which you haven't.
I haven't. But I do have a comic doodle print behind me.
Still. Yeah, made that one.
But if you make an NFT, all I get is some fucking token that tells me I own it. I don't get a print of it. I don't get, I can print it myself. I can then pay more money to then print it myself if I want to. But what's the point of that? I can just buy a print.
Adopt animals for you in another country for your birthday.
Yeah. What? Does that happen?
I just wanted to say that because it's the thing. Yeah, you know when like people like they'll like you adopt like a panda in a zoo somewhere.
Oh yeah.
Or like someone does it for you. It's like I want the panda.
Panda. Or someone names a star after you, like, thanks, but I have that star? I can't do anything with it. It's essentially an empty gesture, what it is.
Yes.
And NFTs have basically been like, let's assign dollar value to it, which I understand, you know, wanting to make money on your art, but I think it's a pretty craven.
I wouldn't want anyone to own something like that. I want someone to buy a print and put it on their wall and then be like,
yeah. But also, I mean, like, you know, far be it for me to like tell people how they should be enjoying their art, but it's also kind of like, you know,
but how can you enjoy it like that? I don't know. It's just me.
People can enjoy, you know, I don't know. But the thing is, like, that one artist sold their one piece of art for like $6 million or something, right? And then, you know, people jumped on this bandwagon because they thought that they too can get rich quickly by selling NFTs of their work, which I understand the notion. I get the impulse to want to make money like that, but that's such a rare thing. And people on Twitter were saying, like, people are making life-changing money doing this. And I'm like, who? Please show me some examples, because I haven't seen anyone in the community that I know, or anyone in the community like adjacent to like people that I know, that are like feeding their families selling NFTs. Like, I don't think that's happening. And then on top of that, it's just kind of like, I don't know, there's this very smug weirdness around the community that like I always felt kind of weird about. But then after my post, and after having people be like very mad about it and attacking me, people went to my YouTube videos and left
really
comments. Yeah, I had to like take would a bunch you, down.
So would you ever do it then?
Fuck no, absolutely not. It's not within my, I don't care about that. I don't want to treat my work as an investment possibility. I don't want to sell someone a digital token to my artwork. That's so,
yeah, to me that's God, that's fucking like, jacked. It's the opposite of what I feel like it's about. I don't know, but
it yeah, just feels wrong. It feels weird. I don't like the way it feels. It feels,
and it's not like when you and I are in, you know, financially privileged positions to be like turn down money.
We're
it's
not
just that. No, I mean, I'm definitely not. But like, and I mean, judging on the crack den that you sleep in, like, you're yeah. not either.
Mm-hmm. I am actually yeah, paying. That, someone's paying me to live here, actually.
You know that bit in Seven where the guy's got all the like the car fresheners, and like he's lying around in that bed. Like, that's mm-hmm. what your room looks like from here, just without the car fresheners.
I was trying to redo that room from Seven. I want to actually be that guy.
Seven's such a good film.
Yeah, it's brutal. But that being said, NFTs, I'm not a fan of them. And based on this latest interaction I've had with their community, I don't think the community, I think it's very toxic. There's a lot of toxicity there, and I'm really not into it. And I really hate that I can't say, like, have an opinion that's not, I mean, it was just, it was tame, and it was taken to such a length. Like, I didn't say fuck NFTs, but like, people, I might as well have just been like, if anyone, I might have said like, if you do NFTs, fuck you. But I didn't say that, not even close. And people got really pissed. So yeah, I think that community needs a lot of like introspection.
I don't have enough knowledge about NFTs to have too much of an opinion, other than the broad idea of what they are. And I really, it almost repulses me. So
it's the blockchain. That's right. Get on the blockchain. If you're not on the blockchain, then like, where are you? You know?
Stop using phrases I don't understand.
I don't even know what it is, to be honest with you. If it's not, if I can't feed myself today with it, I don't care. If I can't like pay my bills with it, if I can't like sustain myself without being a Wall Street investor, like, it's worthless to me. You know, it does nothing for people who are young and poor and need to get into photography, that, you know, who want to be photographers. It does nothing for, you know, established photographers who, you know. There's a guy I know who, you know, was trying to tell me about how great NFTs were. And I had seen one of his NFTs that he made. He had like minted it for like a couple $1,000. And then every couple of weeks he had like dropped the price, and it was like dropped down to like, I don't know, $400 or something. Like, he kept dropping it because like no one wants to buy it. And that's not because his work isn't good. It's because like the market's already saturated. And like, what the fuck is an NFT anyway? Like, why would someone want to pay that much money for a token that says they own a picture that lives online that you can't tangibly do anything with? It's just so bizarre. And so
it's weird. It's like, yeah, it's super weird. I don't get it.
I hate it. Anyway.
Yeah. I can't have much more to say because I don't really know anything about it, but
yeah,
you, Christopher Stormer, are a man of the people. You're a man with a voice. You're an intelligent man. And it's a privilege to hear your opinion on such things.
Thanks. I try not to be stupid and like, ignorant with my opinions, but inevitably people get upset.
And if you want, as always, I'm happy to find the guy on Twitter that said certain things to you, and I will hunt them down and I will kill them.
You know, just for legality's sake, I'm going to say don't do that, but I'm winking. You can't see it because it's a podcast, but I'm winking. Winking. So, all that aside, we have Alistair Ann back for our second edition with her.
I think we have her back because, one, she's got a lot to say. Two, we have a lot to ask her. And three, as is often the case with us when we interview people, we just collect like best friends.
Oh, I was going to say we keep bothering her and she just wants to get us off her back.
Yeah, but that's friendship, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say that's pretty much friendship. So yeah,
that's best friends. Exactly how I got you to do this podcast.
Honestly, that is how that literally is how you got me to do this podcast. You wouldn't shut up about it. You wouldn't stop bugging me. And then you're like, let's do a podcast. And I was like, God, this guy's never going to go away. And now we're best friends, practically brothers.
Yeah. I told someone the other day, but like that someone said, oh, I listened to your podcast. And they're like, they really liked it. And I was like, okay, cool. Thanks. Like, how do you know each other? And I was like, do you want something funny? I was like, I pestered him on Instagram once. And then I interviewed him for another thing I did. And then I just kept pestering him to do this podcast. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, yeah, but how do you know him? I was like, I just told you. They're like, what? You've never met? I was like, no. He's like, I've literally never met him in real life, ever.
Yeah, that's the truth, everyone. If you guys were wondering why we know each other, Mike just bothered me on Instagram, and here we are.
Hello.
Hello. So, anyway, yeah.
Alistair, part two.
I'm really excited to have her back, because, yeah, she's great. We had a really good time talking to her before. I just want to have 4-hour-long conversations with her and our other guests too. But you know, we have a time frame. We gotta fit in.
Well, I have a time frame.
Yeah, you have a family, you weird nerd.
I know. I had sex
once. So look out for that. We'll have Alistair Ann back on the pod. I'm really excited for that. Ray Barbie. He wants to come back on the pod too, so we're definitely
going
to
do a part two with him. You hung out with Ray.
Yeah, I did. Oh yeah. We're supposed to post. I was going to post a picture. I took some portraits. I took portraits of Ray a couple weekends ago at the Long Beach SoCal camera show. Got to hang out with him for a couple hours. It was cool.
Christopher's doing the editing this week, by the way, guys. So yeah. Enjoy that. And second of all, if you want to check out the guy's work that I assisted for, mm-hmm. we'll pop his name in the show notes too.
Yeah, we'll drop that in the show notes.
He's a talented fashion editorial photographer.
Yeah, and then we'll also put some pictures up of, you know, we'll drop some posts on the Instagram, and then we'll also stick a little poll or a little like question answer thing in our Instagram if you want to ask Alistair any questions on our next interview with her. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
We'll speak Gen, to you all.
NFTs.
NFTs. Assisting. Didn't cover enough of Stephen. Although, just as a little hint, Christopher and I are thinking about doing a film-based special podcast, which is beyond exciting for both of us. Mm-hmm. That we're not going to hint at the film, but it's a game changer.
Honestly, I want to talk about it now, but we can't. We got to wait.
We can't.
It's going to have to do with film photography broadly, but it'll be more focused on a film from our lives, from our childhoods, that we both
probably one of the best films ever made.
Yeah, we both hold near and dear and probably shaped who we are today, for sure.
Definitely me.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for tuning in.
We'll be back soon.
We'll be back in 2 weeks, I guess, with Alistair. Yeah, 2 weeks. Toodle pip.
Toodle pip.